grace, it scares me half to death. Look up to the future, but it tells you nothing, so take another breath. Your hands protect the flames from the wild winds around you.
This is Souls of Mischief, an Avengers Teen Wolf crossover fic, written by Horrors and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated R, contains the pairings Loki, Sheriff Stilinski, Derek Cale, Styles Stilinski, Allison Argent, Scott McCall, with additional tags for family, dubious morality, tricksters, time travel, gender bending, female Loki.
Look who's digging their own grave, that is what they all say. You'll drink yourself to death. Look who makes their own bed, lies right down within it. And what will you have left? Out on the front doorstep, drinking from a paper cup. You won't remember this. Living beyond your years, acting out all their fears. You feel it in your chest.
Chapter 1. Zero. After the events in New York, his rather irritating defeat at the hands of his brother and the band of heroes, Loki needs to disappear. His allies will not be pleased, and he refuses to stay under Asgardian rule when he's clearly not one of them. It's easy to escape his prison. Even easier to slip into a time stream and let the past or future hide him. The stream drops him in Northern California, around the end of a century. He's on a highway, and no Midgardian would pick up a man as unsettling as Loki. He's learned that much. He quickly shifts into the skin of a she. One. John had been running in formation with the other police academy cadets when he first saw her. She was wearing a bright green summer dress, her dark brown hair brushing her shoulders, drawing his attention to her light skin, and he's appreciating her sandals, how they snake up her legs and end in bows, when he smacks into a wall. "That building is new," he squawked, as Sarge and the other cadets all stared at him in disbelief. Oh, but the girl in green had laughed the most carefree sound in the world, and he found himself staring at her with his mouth slack, completely dumbstruck that a woman as beautiful as her exists. Two. John spends most of his time at the police academy wooing her. Look, yeah, and that's a pretty name, and so her. She's everything he's ever wanted out of a woman. She's beautiful and so sharp, John feels like a fool every time he speaks, and she's got a great sense of humor. On their first date, they had thrown firecrackers in open car windows two towns over. How the woman got firecrackers, John could never find out, but he knew that night he was in love. He asks her to marry him, the night he scares kids spray-painting under a bridge off, and invites her to turn their tagging into crude diagrams. Three. Their wedding is before a justice of the peace, after she's been arrested for public indecency. "You can't blame me," she sniffed, looking far too regal in his uniform shirt. "You are never home, and I wanted to get married before our baby was due. I believed this route would reward me with all your attention the swiftest." She makes her announcement when his boss and all his co-workers are in attendance, of course, and there's plenty of cheering and slaps on the back, his boss excusing the charges in light of the news. "Just tie her down before she does it again, eh, Stilinski?" John still has the pictures from that day. Her in his uniform shirt, the cuffs rolled to her elbows, wearing shorts and flip-flops, and him in his uniform, spinning her around by the waist. There's also pictures as her pregnancy progresses. In every photo, she's glowing in green and smiling. John will sometimes take the photo album out and trace her with his eyes until he can remember her laugh and how she would say, "Only fools underestimate my family," with a viciously loving smile. He loves everything about her, even when she insists on naming their son Yisr. "It was my father's name," she says, when John voices his frustration at not being able to pronounce the name. He stares at her, stunned, for a few minutes because Nokia doesn't talk about her family. From what he's understood, she's on poor terms with them, her father always preferring her brother to her, and he knows this is important to her, even if he doesn't understand her loyalty to a man not willing to see how wonderful his daughter is. Because she's his wife, and he's sure she hung the moon and all the stars, he accepts the name. 4. "John, Yisra's fine." Lokia waves away his concerns. "It's the rest of this world that is the problem." A sneer touches her lips, and even as sick and pale as she is ferociously beautiful. They only think laterally. He thinks sideways, backwards, forwards. They don't understand him and want to take that away from him. He pets her back through the thin hospital gown. They've been in and out of the hospital for 6 months now. A disease they tentatively call cancer, but doesn't react like anything they've ever seen raging through her body. Lokia doesn't seem all too concerned with it. What will be, will. She always kisses him afterwards, and he prepares himself for her death. Stiles. A concession Lokia made when John butchered his real name so badly Stiles began to cry about his father not loving him enough to learn his real name. Always sits on the end of her bed after school. He's there when John picks him up from school, and he's there when John picks him up to go home for the night. Lokia is teaching him all she can while she can, although he hopes she doesn't reveal her firework connections to him. She dies. And there's a hole in their family she used to occupy. But they're strong. She taught them to be strong, and they would make her proud. 5. Loki has been to Earth before. He doesn't say anything about his lives on Earth. They are private, and his. Memories that Thor and Odin can never take from him. Most of his other children on Earth are dead or bound by the other gods for centuries. All but one. He remembers the instant Thor is banished to Earth, and all he can think is, "Thor will destroy him, will take him from me." He goes back to Midgard 4 years after his magic forced him from the realm. He remains in his male form, but can't help the likeness. Lokia had been as close to his physical traits as he could manage, to lessen the effort it would take to hold the magic. It takes him seconds to locate his offspring, and when he does, Loki laughs. Laughs like he hasn't since he was a boy. His child, Ysir Lokison, is sitting on the steps of a burnt-out house, an alpha werewolf laying at his feet, magic spreading from his son to the other werewolves he can sense in the forest. And it was indeed a forest. Before, it had been a small woodland compared to the rest of the state of California, a small area activists had fought tooth and nail to keep various interests from destroying. Now, the area was thick with trees and life. Loki can feel the vegetation growing, inching every hour outwards, his son encouraging it to do so. He isn't at all surprised when his son sees him and smirks. He is Ysir Loki's son, after all.
Icarus is flying too close.
Chapter 2. 1. Styles' first memory of his mom is green. Her green eyes, her green dresses, her green scarves, her green blouses, and her green barrettes. When Styles is afraid, he hides his face in a green quilt that still smells like her. Styles' second memory of his mom is the wicked cadence of her voice as she shared secrets with him when they would run errands in town. He remembers feeling so special his mom shared secrets with him, like he was a grown-up too. She told him about Mr. Martin's affairs and what affair meant. Whispered in his ear that the Whitmores are stealing money from the government and the Mahialanis stole a fairy child. She explained why Scott's dad left forever and why the full moon was the brightest from their porch. He was 6 at the time, and he didn't fully understand until he was 10. Mom introduced Mr. Martin to all his lovers in hopes of watching the backlash as the corporate lawyer and hotel heiress divorced, making headlines. She showed the Whitmores how to hide the money behind legal nonsense. She's the one who showed Mrs. Mahialani how to find them and how to outwit the fairies. She's the one who told Scott's mom she wanted a divorce while wearing Scott's dad's face when the man left town without a word. His mom is the one who held him tight under the moon as she told him about his brothers and sisters, and how, if the moon shined, he'd be looked after. His mom gives him the most beautiful smile when the school demands Styles is either put on ADHD medication or he's not welcome. Magic, his mother whispers, will not be denied. And you are strong with it, Mayusur. She shows him the illusions, how to shift, how to lie without lying, how to make someone believe his ideas are theirs. She teaches him so much, especially in the days she's losing her grasp in this realm. His mom's strength begins to fail, and his dad is always glued to her side at the hospital. Styles isn't as affected. Knows his mom's shell is dying because her father has found her and is demanding her home. Before she leaves, she tells him, "You are the son of Loki." 2. They would play pranks. "My love," she pets his cheek as they watch a man sob in the store at the loss of a girlfriend. The world needs chaos and disorder. It does not make us evil if we are the providers. We maintain balance. Styles never felt guilty about his pranks again. The fact that his latest prank ended with Scott turning into a werewolf? Well, that's icing on the cake Styles is finding he really wants to devour. There's hunters, a vendetta, murder, and werewolves. It doesn't get much more chaotic than that. Styles is excited. He thinks his mom would be so proud. He encourages the romance between Alice and Anne Scott, because when that blows up, Beacon Hills is going to shake apart. He injects himself into the life of Derek Hale. The mystery of the Alpha makes his brain itch in the most pleasant of ways. He corners Jackson and tells him if he gets the bite, Lydia will be in danger, so break it off with her. Lydia, bless the girl, is something of a special project of his. She's so insistent she's better and smarter and prettier. It only takes passing observations to make her lose her control until she's breaking under pressure to be absolutely perfect in every way. Of course, not all his pranks are so cruel. He puts the seed in his dad's mind. He's gay, or isn't. It's fun. It also freaks Danny out. Styles knows he's driving the wolf and Derek insane. He thinks it's funny to watch Derek's jaw tighten and fingers flex in a desperate bid for control. "Styles," Scott said, "smells like hazelnut and chocolate, and something that makes Scott want to tear him apart to figure out how Styles works." Styles assumes it's the magic that makes Scott sound like a homicidal maniac. But Styles is a reckless maniac, and has his fun taunting the born werewolf. 3. Styles has his responsibilities and regrets. Like when everyone finds out Styles has magic, he's forced to learn from Deaton twice a week. Parlor tricks his mom would have sneered at and called common. Styles isn't common. He's something extraordinary. Or the Kanema. And holy awesome, Batman! He had a hand in creating a Kanema. He can hardly wait to tell his mom. And gods, he wished he could have been Jackson's master. The chaos. Oh well. Derek's pack starts to come together and function like SWAT, and he's tempted to pout. Derek was made for destruction. All Styles wants is for Derek to drop his guilt about everything and help Styles unleash anarchy upon the world. Is that all too much for a boy to ask? But there are some positives. The pack has stepped up their game because they're preparing to go to war against the Hunters. And what did he say about Allison and Scott? Derek is trusting him, and Styles is happy. Stupidly, recklessly, Styles lets his guard drop around the pack. Around Derek. Oops. 4. Enough, Derek snarls. Styles grabs at the hand firmly encircled around his throat. He hasn't decided whether to press Derek's hand tighter or to keep the werewolf from choking him. He honestly hadn't expected to see Derek so soon, which maybe made Styles' crush on the werewolf that much bigger. People were easy. They rarely surprised him. Derek, Styles chokes out a smile. What a surprise. I mean, I know we have this thing where you suddenly show up in my room and scowl and demand I make Scott smarter, but usually that's later. If I'd known you were impatient to besmirch Scott, I would have waited to take a shower. Derek's hand twitches, and his face says he wants to squeeze. But he doesn't. Derek is too cautious for that. Good thing Styles really isn't. He makes up his mind and pushes Derek's hand hard around his throat until he can barely breathe or choke words out. Feel nice. The second surprise of the night. You gods, Styles might actually be in love if Derek keeps it up. Is Derek doesn't let go or back away. Even when Styles lets his hand fall away, Derek keeps his grip. You've been teasing me, he says. Styles is delighted. Truly. He never thought Derek would acknowledge it. Him. Thought that maybe he had a few more years ahead of him before Derek finally snapped. Styles nods, still smiling, tears burning at the corners of his eyes from the burn. This is so good. Styles wonders if Derek knows he's a little more durable than the average human, or if he's joining Styles in the "I don't care, I just want it" camp. Derek nods slowly, his eyes green. And Styles never understood his mom's obsession with the color, but now he gets it. And dark, wanting, and reckless. Styles is in a towel. He knows where this is going. You've been teasing me, Derek says again. And I tried to be good, tried to ignore you, tried to stay away. But I can't
and it's your fault.
The knot on his throat leaves, slowly, like Derek doesn't want to abandon his hold, but is being called to other interesting parts of Styles' body.
Yeah,
Styles breathes.
It is.
5. Derek made Styles fall in love with him. Completely accidentally on the werewolf's part, truly. But Derek stops caring. Or maybe it's... he cares so much about Styles, he doesn't have it in him to care about anything else. Erica and Boyd declare their intentions to abandon the pack. And all Derek says is, okay. And lets them leave without even looking in their direction. Like he's bored with them. It was one of the best things Styles has ever seen. They hadn't even left the house before Styles had thrown his limbs at Derek, hungry for the wolf the human isn't bothering to keep in check any longer. Peter sees it. Styles doesn't know what happened to the man while he was dead, but he died thinking Styles a tasty pet and came back with respect in his eyes. Maybe he met one of his brothers? Peter watches Styles free, and that's what he's doing, freeing Derek from this world that hurts and bleeds all the goddamn time. Derek from his iron shackles of his humanity. The older werewolf steps in as a guide for Scott, Jackson, and Isaac, when Derek can't be bothered to spare them attention. He only sees you in his pack, Scott growled at Styles. That's when Styles had known. And they are confused. It's wonderful in the best of ways. How Derek is just Styles now. How Derek is willing to give him anything, even Ragnarok if Styles asks. He sometimes wonders, when he has Derek in his wolf form in his lap, the hulking monster he is, if his mom planned it this way. After all, the end of the world is started by Skoll, Hati, and Fenrir. What aren't Derek and Styles capable of? The end. Arthas notes. Ysir is one of Odin's names, and means Riddler. I thought it was fitting. I wanted to see Twisted and Mean Loki in the Stilinski family, and the impact that would have. Mostly, I just wanted to inspire someone else to write epic awesomeness about Loki as Styles' mom. If you've got the impression Derek will be Fenrir and battle against Odin when Ragnarok comes, you'd be impressing right. Reader's Notes. This podfic was recorded because tomorrow is February 22nd, 2014, and according to most reliable calendars, it's the day of Ragnarok! We should be expecting an endless winter. Oh wait, it's the snowpocalypse outside, check. And then a bunch of natural disasters, which hopefully won't come around, but I thought it fitting to post a story about Loki's kid potentially starting the end of the world on the day of the end of the world. I got my pronunciation for Ysir and Loki from Google Translate. So if I've been saying those names wrong this whole time, we're going to blame Google and not me. Thank you for listening. And if it turns out tomorrow is the end of the world, well, I hope you enjoyed listening to this before it happens. Have a nice day.
Icarus is flying. When you leave, you leave it.
once you're certain of who you want to be, you're putting up your arms.